Gee, that's a long time. That's even before the Beatles. Like, you know,
the original or the second version?
The original. Mel Brooks was one of the writers.
Wow.
Not that I keep up with trivia or anything.
No, of course not.
Get smart. Wow. We definitely want to get smart. That's for sure. So here he says the following on page 255, Uberaivit lo tiritz ken. So let's just understand what we had here at the end of our discussion on page 254. We had what I call the schizophrenic mukta. And I'll tell you when we're up to it, Harvey, but right now I just want to review a point that I made yesterday. And that is that you can have something that at the same time is muktzah and it's not muktzah, which is very strange. The same kli, the same vessel, could be both muktzah and not muktzah at the same time, which means that if you use it for X, then it's muktzah. If you use it for Y, then it's not muktzah. So take, for example, a kli shemalachto le'isur, according to one school of thought, which is represented by the Ramban, and we'll see the Ravid Shita. It's, if you use it mechamel etzel, it's called muktzah. But if you use it for gufo, then it's not muktzah. So that's what he says over here, that the Ravid doesn't want to approach it that way because he has a different shita. So what I suggest is, let's put this on the side for the time being. We'll come back to the Ravid Bulneder, and let's see if we can go through the Mishnah and the Gemara here on Daf Kuf Chav Gimel Amud Beis. I think that's the order for the day. Okay, so the Mishnah.
Which Mishnah?
The first Mishnah on Daf Kuf Chav Gimel. No, I'm sorry. The second Mishnah on Daf Kuf Chav Gimel Amud Beis says the following: Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kol HaKelim Nitol. This is a repetition of what we saw at the beginning of the Perek on Kuf Chav Beis, where the Mishnah said, "Kol HaKelim Nitolim." However, Chutz Min HaMasor HaGona. Masor is some sort of a saw, a gigantic saw. It's used to cut down beams, wooden beams. And then he has another case, which is the exception. V'yosed Shel Machresha. Machresha is a plow, a very large utensil, vessel. And it is also has like almost like knives, I guess you could say, on the bottom that cut into the ground in order to open up the ground and prepare it for planting. And in this gigantic kli, this kli which is called a yosed shel machresha, we have what's called a kli that is mukta machmas chisaron kis.
Because it's expensive.
Right. It's a very valuable kli, and it's used exclusively either in the case of a meser to cut beams, to saw down beams, or alternatively the case of a plow, which is again a very heavy duty kind of machinery, and it's expensive. And he is makbid alehem. He's very careful about them. And he's miyachid le mokom. He sets it up in a certain place, locks it up in a shed or wherever it is. And therefore, it's not roy for any other malacha whatsoever. Now, what we have to understand is whether or not this sheet of Rabbi Yossi recorded in the Mishnah reflects Rabbi Yehuda, or is it something that even Rabbi Shimon could accept? Because we said that although Rabbi Shimon denies muktzah, however, there are categories of muktzah that he accepts. So I have a footnote here that tells you to look in Kuf Nun Zayin. We're not going to do that right now. And the Gemara says on Kuf Nun Zayin that these two kelim that are mentioned here in the Mishnah are muktzah machmas chisaron kis.
Very expensive.
Right. And Rashi here says, Einam ru'uyim l'malacha acheres, that this is what they're designated for, and they have no other purpose. But again, keep in mind that Rashi also adds the phrase, U'miyached lehem makom. So you want to underline those words, U'miyached lehem makom. So Rashi has two conditions here that are necessary to generate mukta machmas kisor and kis. Number one, einom ruuyim lemalach acheres. They have the specific function, and that's exclusive. And number two, they are also what we would call miyached lemakom. They are placed in a very specific location, and therefore they're not to be used anywhere else. This gives us a category of muktzah that's very extreme. He's mamash makta le midaito. And although other commentaries might say you don't need miyached le makom, but Rashi insists that we're talking about miyached le makom. And if that be the case, then we're really discussing a category of muktzah that even Rav Shimon could agree. Even Rav Shimon could agree that this is mukta, because if he's miyachid limokom, it's like dechia biyadayim, like the case that we had of grogos vitzimuki. Now this is all on daf kufchav gimel amid beis. I don't want you to lose the place. Please hold on to kufchav gimel amid beis. Yes, please.
When you say a specific place, it's placed there, or can only be used there.
The impression I get from Rashi, miyached le'makom, means he wants to make sure that it is only there, you know, not anywhere else. That's where he stores it. He stores it in
storing
a,
it. Yeah. Not using it.
He's storing it in that place. Now I want you to turn, without losing the place, again, I'm always nervous about telling you to look at a different place, if you could go back for a moment to Kufchav Gimel Amid Aleph, okay, that just means turning the page back to the other side of the page, you will see that there's a case here called Sichi Zairi Umizore. Okay, so let me tell you where that is on Kuf Chav Gimel Amid Aleph. And we're counting down approximately 10 lines from the top. Okay, the first word in the line is Bar. Does that help anybody?
Yes.
Okay, good. So he says, Hakol Modim, and here, I don't know, Don, you have the English translation? Okay, yeah. That's helpful, because these are all weaving utensils that are quite...
I got to find it.
Quite, you know, 10 lines down from the top on Kufav Gimel Amid Aleph.
Okay, I didn't copy the Hebrew page.
Oh, I see. So look, if you have the English page, do you have Kufav Gimel Amid Aleph?
Yeah.
So it should be... It should be like...
No, I don't.
You don't have Kufchav Gimel Amid Aleph. So
yeah, I do. I'm sorry.
You do.
I'm looking at that.
Okay.
That's why I'm not finding.
Great. So if you go down, it'd probably be about, in art school, I suppose, it'll be about 20 lines down, maybe. You know, just double it. See if you can find it. So what are these three kalim? So first of all, I'll tell you what their translation, the translation of these kalim into Hebrew. And then you'll see what the English has. So he says the following, that Sichi, Zaire, Umizore are Klei Hatzaba'im. These are utensils that are used by dyers, those who dye. And Rashi quotes another opinion here, in the name of his Rebbe, who says that Kli Argim, they're weaving utensils. Okay, then, so I have a picture of it here. I don't know if you have a picture of it in the art scroll, but in the Masifta they have a little picture of it. And basically in this weaving utensil, you have the Sichi on the main poles that form the framework, the outer framework of the weaving utensil. Then you have the Mazori. The Mazori is where the thread wraps around a certain horizontal pole so that the thread can be lowered down into something called the Ze'iri, and that's where the actual weaving takes place. And these are utensils which everybody agrees are mukta. And we don't know what that means, everybody agrees. It would seem that there's no one who disagrees. And why? What's special about these utensils? The cave under kapit alaihu, since these professionals, whether we're talking about dyers, according to Rashi, or his Rebbe who says that these are weavers, in either case, is kapit alaihu. They're very meticulous, they're very concerned that these utensils should not be misused. It shouldn't get dirty. It shouldn't get twisted out of line. Is there from miyached le makom? This is the source for our Rashi here in the Mishnah on Kufchav Gimel and Beis. He designates a specific place for them to make sure that no one takes them, and therefore it's aser betiltel even litzargufal tzach makoma, meaning it's real mukta. And in the case that the Gemara is trying to discuss here at the beginning of this Amud on Kufchav Gimel Amud Aleph, which is the case of Madocha, you remember the grinder. So Hachinami, there too, in the case of the grinder, Miyachid Lu Makom, it seems that this machine called a Madocha is very significant, and therefore he designates a special place, and that makes it into Muksa. So let's go back to our Mishnah. I just wanted to point out to you that Rashi is basing himself here on that. Does he have any footnote on that?
I couldn't find it.
Give it to me and I'll give it back. I promise I won't steal it. We'll just see. Sometimes it's good to see it in the English. Okay, thanks. Here. He says, spindles, clothes, presses, and mallets. I think I'll stick to the Hebrew. The only word I understood on that list was spindles. All right. Now we get to the Gemara. Omar Rav Nachman, Hai Uchla de Katsari. Okay, this is another kind of utensil. And once again, maybe now the English will make sense. I don't know. So this is a copper utensil that's used by the washers, by, you know, the professional kovsim, as we call them, for kibus. And it looks like a sieve in the sense that it has holes in it. And what they do is they pour the water into this uchla de katsre, and they sprinkle the beged with the water because it's siphoned through these various little holes. And Rav Nachman says, Ki yosei shamach reisha damyo, it has the same status as the plow in our Mishnah, because once again, it's a very specific utensil that people are makpid on because they need it in their profession. Do we have that, Don, in the...
Yeah? Well, I'm sorry. Here, I found the place.
Let me read it for a second. I'll give it back. Okay. And he says the following.
Where is this?
He says, okay, so we spoke about the large saw. Then we said he has something here which I call the plow. He calls it a coulter, C-O-L-T-E-R. Let's see if he adds anything here. He says a coulter is the knife part of a plow that cuts into the ground. Okay, so I guess in the bottom of the plow there's a coulter.
Yeah, there's a whole thing to break up the ground.
Again, it's called a coulter. You can call it blades if you like, but he calls it a coulter.
It's called
cultivation. C-O-L-T-E-R.
Cultivation. When they break up the
soil. Okay, great. And then we have the case of Uchlo de Katsre. He calls it a launderer's riddle. Okay, I love riddles, but I didn't know that there was a... he says in the footnote, it's a perforated copper vessel from which the launderer would pour water on clothing to rinse it. Okay, so that's what we have here. And Omer Abai says, Charba de Ushpeche. Now, Ushpeche is a tanner, and he has a specific knife that's designated, and it's expensive for his profession as a tanner. And then Sakina, which is again a knife, Diashchavta, which is a butcher's knife. And he has Chatzino Dinagre, is a carpenter's knife or adze. And Yesei Chamachreshna has the same status as the others, and basically that's all mukt. Okay, then, so let me give this back to you. And now we're ready to start the sugya. I don't know where Ben left. I hope he's coming back, because this is something he doesn't want to miss. But I can tell you a few stories just to fill in and just so he doesn't.
No tap dance?
I can tap dance, yeah. I'm a great tap dancer, you should know. They hired me professionally and they asked me who do I want as musicians. I told them that Yehuda sings his trumpet. And tap dancing doesn't seem to mesh with trumpets, but we'll figure that out. Okay, Ben's not coming, so we're going to just have to start this sugya, because if we wait too long, then the people might start getting edgy and worship an eagle or something. I don't know what they'll do. So we're not going to wait for the big boss to come. And we won't stall anymore. And we're not going to speak slowly or anything like that.
Maybe you want to say something about Purim just for a second.
All right. So look, I have to tell you about Purim. That if Purim coincides with Shabbos, then we don't read the Megillah. And the reason for that is because we're afraid that we might carry the Megillah out from Rishus HaYochid into Rishus HaRabin. And since Purim coincides with Shabbos, we can't read the Megillah. Therefore, we're going to see to it that Purim will never coincide with Shabbos. Nobody laughed at my joke, but okay, anyway.
Is it a joke? Right. It's true, no?
It is true, actually. Omer Rav Nachman. Okay.
I got it.
Yeah.
Okay, Omer Rav Nachman.
Okay, then, I don't know, Ben's not here, so we're going to just have to, we're just going to, no, Yehuda, I don't want, Ben, I'm going to have to send a posse for you, Yehuda.
Yeah, yeah. Yehuda, he does it.
All right. Tana Rabbanan. We're going to start with Tana Rabbanan again. Rabosai, this Brisa will take us back to the period of the second Bais. And it says, Barishona, back at the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, people were very lax about some of the prohibitions of Shabbos. They weren't as observant as we would like them to have been. And therefore the Chachamim decided to institute a Gzerah, which would be very harsh, a real Chumrah, and make sure that they would get the message that they should stop this kind of lackadaisical attitude towards the observance of Shabbat. So what they did was, where do they attack them? Where do they institute this Gzerah? Tiltul Kalim. Okay, Hayu Omrim, and therefore the Gzerah went as follows. Shlosha Kalim Nitolim B'Shabbos. You're listening, Rabosai.
Okay,
only
where are we?
We are on Daf Kufchav Gimel and Beis, and I begged you not to lose the place. But I see that I didn't beg.
The beginning of the Shema.
Okay. That's what David, when I went back to Kufchav Gimel and Aleph, I asked you to keep your finger on the place because I knew that it's very hard for you guys to move back and forth, even if it means just turning the page the other side.
Why not?
Alright, I'm just needling you because of this whole discussion about the spindle and the needle and all that stuff. Right. And Purim, of course. Okay. By the way, I'm hoping to get some grommet about me on Purim. If you don't make fun of me on Purim, I get very insulted. Okay. So, Hayu Omrim Shlosha Kalim Nitolim V'Shabbos. There are only three Kalim that you're allowed to move on Shabbos. And what are they? The first one is a kind of a knife, because we need a knife on Shabbos. It's called a Mektsoa Shel Dvela. In those days, they used to take dates, and they would dry them, and then they would pound them together into some sort of a gush. A gush means a solid. And then, in order to cut into this solid and separate one date, one fig from the other, did I say dates? I meant to say figs, okay, but the same thing would apply to dates. So they used a certain specific kind of a knife, and that's mutal l'taltil b'Shabbos, even back in the time of Nechemya ben Chachalya. The second kli is called a zuama listerin shel kedera. If you've ever made a chicken soup, you know that on the top of the chicken soup, there's a certain film of grease or oil that you want to get rid of. So in order to skim it off on top, you take a utensil that's specifically made for that purpose, and it's called a Listerine. Has nothing to do with a mouthwash or anything like that. But and this is called Zuama. Zuama means that film on top of the on top of the kedera when you cook it. And it's basically a very large spoon. So we now have a knife and a spoon. That's good. And then we're left with a sakin ktana shal gabei ashulchan. They used to have smaller knives. The knife that was used to cut into the dvela was a larger knife. And a smaller knife, which was used to cut bread or meat or any other kinds of foods. And these three utensils back in the day were the mainstay utensils that you needed on an ongoing basis to get through Shabbos. And when the Chachamim saw that the people were not careful about observing the Shabbos, they imposed upon them a very strict, harsh gzeirah that limited their use of kelim to these three kelim. Bless you. So you've got a spoon and a knife. I don't know about a fork. That's confused to me. Well, I would have added a fork to the list.
Spoon
we have. That's called the Listerin Shel Kedera.
No, I don't think they stay with forks in those days. I think they either
they didn't eat with forks.
The
okay.
Fingers or a spoon.
According to Shlomo, okay, that's good. Picture of a
he has a picture fork? Of a fork?
No, picture of a fork with a spoon at the end.
Wow, and what does he call that underneath?
That's the Zuma Lister.
Oh, wow. So that's cool. So it's a double function. It's very, very clever. Very clever. I'm keen on that. I think we should
better
sort it all out.
Swiss Army knife.
Okay. So then the people started getting the message, and they started doing tshuva. And they started being more careful, a little bit more careful at least, at this stage, with regard to observing the Shabbos. So, hitiru, they loosened the belt, and they took that original gzera, and they limited it, and they allowed certain things. Now, we're not sure yet exactly what they allowed. That's going to be a machlokas coming up in the Gemara between Abaye and Rava, because right now we're just learning the Braisa. And then after that heter, which we'll call heter Roman numeral number 1, Chazu v'tira, they saw that people were getting the message, and once again they were more meticulous about Shabbos, so we're really making progress now, and we get to heter number 2. The Chazu v'tira, and again they realized that they were accomplishing their goal. I guess the Kiruv project worked, and people were getting even more into Shabbos. Is hitiru, Chazu v'tira, this is Roman numeral number 3. Add until we finally get to the bottom line. And this is what's relevant even to us today, which we saw in Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah. Amru, kol ha-kelim nitolim b'Shabbos, that you're allowed to move all kelim on Shabbos. Chutz, with the only exception, is what we saw earlier, a very expensive, large utensil like the Masar HaGadol or the Yosed Shel Machresha. And we said that this is a very large kind of hatchet or an axe or a saw. And we saw about the cutting coulters, the counter coulters of the knives at the bottom of the plows. But that's all that's prohibited. Again, we've already seen in Rav Nachman that the list goes on and on. We have all sorts of professional utensils that are very expensive and you put them away. And we spoke about the dyer's utensils and the laundering utensils and the weaving utensils and all the above. Oh, so now the Gemara presents a machlokas between Abaye and Rava. My hitiru v'chazu v'tiru v'chazu hitiru. What does it mean that there were three stages of heter? Obviously, we're going from the absolute Issur that includes all kelim, with the exception of those three, right? And then gradually, we're allowing more kelim. So what are the various rings, you know, the various circles, and how does it go? Omar Abaye. The first thing that they were matir is itiru davar shemalachto leheter. A kli that's designated for heter, whatever that heter is. It's no longer a spoon, fork, and a knife. It's way beyond that. They allowed you to move that, but they didn't give you a carte blanche heter to use a klisha malachta leheter for anything that you want and any purpose, but rather letzorech gufo, only to use it for its designated function. So if a kli is designated for a certain function, then you're allowed to use it on Shabbos according to the heter rishon, but only for that designated function. Then they expanded the heter. The chazu v'tiru, this is already the second round of heter. Dovr shemalachta leheter litzach makomo. They said that even if you're not using it for its purpose, but you need the space, and therefore you want to clear it off, so you have dishes on the table, and you want to move them not to use the dishes, you're not eating from the dishes, but simply you want to use the table, so you're clearing off the table, that's also mutter now in the second round. Now we get to the third round. V'chazu v'tiru is davar shemalachto le'isur. What does that mean, a davar shemalachto le'isur? We said that a kli shemalachto le'isur is asur. Yeah, but it's only asur mikhamal itzel. Let's see how Abai develops it. He says, l'tzorech gufo. They were matir kli shemalachto le'isur l'tzorech gufo. Now, again, when it says l'tzorech gufo, don't get misled here. It means l'tzorech gufo leheter. You know, we're not allowing you to do an isur with it. But if you can find a heter for it, then if you can find a use for it for heter, then you're allowed to use it. So the Gemara says in meaning only if you're using it for a purpose that's heter. But letzorch makomo lo. However, if you want to clear off a klisha malachta leisur from the table, so let's say for example you would have a hammer that's designated for a carpenter, which we said could also be used to crack his nuts, you would be allowed to use it to crack his nuts, but if you don't have any nuts to crack, you just want to clear it off from the table, that you're not allowed to do, because there was never a heter koin tabaye with regard to klishim latal isur litzorech makoma. It was only litzorech gufa. That's going to be Abai's opinion. Abai continues, and he says the following. Va'adayin, but yet there's still a vestige of the original harsh gzera, and that is biyado achas, that all these heterim that we have, whether it's the original three kalim, whether it's klishim lachta lehetu litzor gufo, klishim lachta lehetu litzor makomo, dover shem lachta leisu litzor gufo, all these heterim of tiltul were only allowed with one hand. Biyado achas in, but b'shtei yadov lo. If it's such a heavy kli that you'll have to pick it up with two hands, that's not mutter. That's already too much of a tircha. You know, already you're too connected to the kalim that you use during the week. You know, small kalim. You know, that's. No. Again, listen carefully.
Okay.
What we're saying is the following. That the Rabbanan wants you to observe the Shabbos. They don't want you to be connected to Chol. If you're moving small kalim that can be moved with one hand, they're very light, that's okay. But if you need two hands, you're talking about something that weighs 50 pounds, it weighs 50 kilo, I don't know what it weighs, but it's very heavy, that's not something that we move around on Shabbos. We're not dedicating our Shabbos to move things and even vessels that are klishim lach leheter, if they're very, very heavy. Oh, now we get to Roman numeral number 4, which is ad sha'amru. So again, if you go back to the Brisa, how many times does it say in the Brisa, hitiru? Let's count it up. We had the case of the first round of hitiru. Let's go through it.
Three.
And the first round of hitiru we said was a klishim lach leheter. Then we have Hitiru. I'm sorry, we have Chazu Vitiru a second time, and that was for Klishim Lachta Lehetel Tzorech Makomo. Then we have Chazu Vitiru, third Vitiru. Then, says Abaye, there's a fourth round. See, this we missed. Roman numeral number 4. Adsha Avru. Meaning, after the third stage of Heter, they saw once again that the people were observing Shabbos. We were making a lot of progress here. And then we get to the fourth stage. And that's called Kol HaKelim Nitolim B'Shabbos. Says Abai, what does that mean? Kol HaKelim Nitolim B'Shabbos? Afilu B'Shtei Yodayim. At this point, they allowed moving Kelim that are very heavy, that can only be moved with two hands. But they never were matir klisha malachta le'isa l'tzorech makomo. They're only matir klisha malachta le'isa l'tzorech gufa. Amalei Rava. Rava asks the following question. Michti, let's analyze the language of the Braisa. Hitiru k'tani. The Braisa says that they were matir, this is Roman numeral number 1, the first heter, which means according to Rav, they were matir moving kelim litzarach Shabbos, malu litzarach gufo, malu litzarach makomo. So now watch what happens here. Abaye understood, that was the first opinion here in the sugya, that gufo and makomo are two separate stages, two separate halachas, two categories that require each its own heter. The first heter, therefore, was only extended only as far as litzarach gufo, and now we need a second heter to extend it and broaden the scope to include litzarach makomo. Comes along Rav and he says, no. There are really two categories. There's litzarach Shabbos, and then there's litzarach chol, which is mechama litzel, as we discussed yesterday at great length, meaning when you're protecting the kli because you want to use it after Shabbos. So Rava says to Abaye that in the original heter, they were matil litzarach Shabbos. Mali litzarach gufo, mali litzarach makomo. If I need the space because I want to set up for shal shudis, let's say, and the table is now occupied by kelim, then that's also litzarach Shabbos. So it matters not whether I'm moving this kli for the purpose of using the kli. Like, let's go back to our case of the carpenter's hammer. Am I using it in order to crack my walnuts, or do I need to free up the space so that I can put my next meal for Shabbos on that space, on that table? In either event, it's always going to be litzarach Shabbos. When does it become shalol litzarach Shabbos? That's called mechama litzel. So therefore, according to Rava, in one fell swoop, they were matir both litzarach gufo and litzarach makomo. Okay, we're going to have to see, therefore, what the next stage in the heter was. Now, if you ask me, what's going on here? I mean, Abai and Rava seem to have some sort of secondary machlokas in a very technical sense, mechanical, whether or not the heter was both gufo and makomo in one fell swoop of asachas, or it was a two-stage heter. It seems to me that Abaye was operating with a whole different premise here than Rava. He was not using what we call litzarach Shabbos. What he was talking about is a tzarech of heter, but the matir here, the first level of matir was for the purpose of achieving some sort of a function. Do you understand what I mean? Using it in some way. So Abai asks himself the following question: When you take the hammer off the table, are you using it or you're not using it? Litzorech Shabbos means litzorech. Litzorech hachonas ochel b'Shabbos, litzorech hachonas kelim b'Shabbos, whatever it might be. But in the case of litzorech makomo, says Abaye, you're not preparing anything for Shabbos. Again, it might be indirectly helping you on Shabbos so that now you can use the place that you freed up. The table now has to be clear so that I can set it up for the next meal. But I'm not using the kli per se. I'm using the kli and moving the kli in order to free up the shulchan, if you follow me, or whatever the makom is. So now Abai says they needed a second heter. What's the second heter? The second heter is, don't look at the function of the kli, but look at the kli itself. In other words, am I moving the kli, and by doing so, I'm enhancing my Shabbos. So again, in the first round, according to Abaye, the tzarech was the mati. The kli was secondary, meaning I have a goal, I need to get access to the walnuts, and they're now covered by a thick shell. So for the sake of that goal, they were mati. It's like, what shall I say, esse docha losase. Like sometimes we allow you to violate a losase for the goal of achieving an essay. So for the greater goal of enjoying Shabbos by having access to the walnuts that you have to break open, they were matir tiltal. However, says Abaye, that doesn't tell me anything about litzarach makoma. The second heter already is in the kli itself. now I forget about the purpose that I have in mind. What's what? The purpose is only the backdrop. What's important here is the kli, what we call the cheftz of the kli. The kli itself now has to be moved. And if there's an urgent need to move the kli, then that's already not considered an isa tilt. Whereas Rava says, no, it's all one heta because it's all litzorech HaShabbos. And to the same extent that Makoma, that Gufo is litzorech Shabbos, so too litzorech Makoma is also litzorech Shabbos. So now according to Rava that we've collapsed both Makomo and Gufo into one, let's go through the various stages of the heta. Elam Rava, here's the way we interpret this brisa. He tira, the first heter was Davish and Malach leheter, Bein Litzar Gufo, Bein Litzar Makoma. Then Chazru Vitiru Michama Litzel. Interesting, this is not something that appeared on Abai's list. It means according to Rava, now they had an absolute heter in the Kli itself. Because again, Abai thought the heter in the Kli was only Litzarech Makomo. Rav understands that the heter of the Kli is even Michamal Itzel, meaning for the sake of the Kli, I'm allowed to move the Kli. That also is considered enough of a Tzorech that we would be Matir Tiltil. So now we have stage number one is Kli Shemlach Lehitl Tzorech Guf Tzorech Makomo. Stage number two is Kli Shemlach Leheter Michamal Itzel. And by the way, at this point, my feelings are with Abaye here. I think Abaye makes more sense than Rava. If Mechamal itself is just security purposes, why should I extend myself and be Matir and Issa Tiltal for security purposes? That's really connected to Motzei Shabbos and the week after Shabbos, not to Shabbos itself. But Rava nevertheless wants to say that they came up with a blanket Heter Tiltal. As long as there's any tzorach that you have in mind, you're allowed to move a kli shemalach leheter. Well, now we're up to stage number three. That's going to be a kli shemalach leiser. Chazu v'tiru davar shemalach leiser litzar gufa ulitzarach makoma. Because again, Rava is of the opinion that if there's going to be a matir called litzarach Shabbos, which in the first round was only a kli shemalach leheter, now they got up to the point where they felt they could even be matir a kli shemalach leiser litzarach Shabbos, then Rava Lishitoso holds that there's no difference from the perspective of litzarach Shabbos between gufo and makoma. But mechama litzel, that's already something else. That did not, how should I say, that didn't merit the heter because that's already security. So again, in the case of Kli Shemalachto Leheter, Rava postulates that after the second round there was an absolute all-inclusive heter as far as tiltul of a Kli Shemalachto Leheter. But with regard to Kli Shemalachto Leiser, there was no heter on tiltul of the Kli, but rather there was a heter to achieve Tzorech Shabbos. For the sake of the Shabbos, they allowed you to move the Kli. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's not inherent in the Kli. They didn't lift or remove, alleviate the Isur Tiltul in the Kli. They left the Isur Tiltul in the Kli, but yet they said, Esse Dochalosa, so they're going to allow you to move the Kli for the sake of a greater good, which is for the sake of Shabbos. But Chamal Itzel, that already goes back to the original Isur Tiltul that was inherent in the Kli, that they never removed. So again, just to summarize, Rava's three stage heterim means number one, litzar Shabbos, they were matir kli shemalach leheter. Number two, even if it's shalol litzar Shabbos, they were matir the kli itself, if it's malach leheter. Number three, they were matir litzar Shabbos, a kli shemalach leisa. What's left here is that a kli shemalach leisa shalol litzar Shabbos, which means michamal itzel. That is the vestige of the original Iser Gzeras Tiltul that we started with. But now we have stage number four. Because it says, Ad Sha'amru Kol HaKelim Nitol B'Shabbos. So according to Abaye postulated that you weren't allowed to move a Kli that was so heavy that you required two people or two hands to lift it. Rav has a different take on it. Rava says, forget about whether you can carry it with one hand or with two hands. Let's ask a different question. Be Adam Echad in B'Shnei B'nei Adam Lo. it's so heavy that not only are you as an individual incapable of carrying it with two hands, but you need another pair of hands. You need actually four hands, so to speak. You need two people carrying it, and only with that partnership can you... That's how large of a kli was prohibited again, because that's connecting you to the tircha of the week. Acha amru. Kol ha-keil yitol b'shabbos afilu b'shnei b'nei adam. Even a utensil that's so weighty that you would need two people to carry it, even that became mutter. And again, did it become mutter in all situations? Well, it depends. If it's a kli shemlachta l'heter, it's an all-inclusive heter, even if you need two people to carry it. If it's a kli shemlachta l'iser, then you're only allowed to move it l'tzar gufo l'tzar makovo, but not michama l'tzel. But the issue of how many people would have to carry it together in order to move it, namely the weight of the kli, is totally irrelevant according to in the fourth round of heter. Now, what I'm curious to know, and if anybody can help me with this, I'll be very thankful. What is the connection here? There seems to be a double machlokas between Abai and Rav. One machlokas I understand, and that's the question whether Litzok Gufo and Litzok Makomo can be united and integrated to form one whole. Rava says, well, if it's a matir of Litzok Shabbos, what difference does it make whether it's Litzok Gufo, Litzok Makomo? And Abai says, no, the Litzok Gufo is the matir, is the actual shimush, the use of the kli, whereas Litzok Makomo has no shimush, and therefore they would not matir it until they came out with a different heter inherent in the kli, that if this kli has to be moved for whatever purpose, you're allowed to move it. That I understand pretty well. There seems to be a second machlokus between Abai Verova, and that is about Chamal Itzel in the case of a Kli Shemlach Lehet, because again, if we go back to Abaye, Abai said, Itiru Dover Shemlach Lehet Litzorach Gufo, and then Chazuv Itiru Litzorach Makomo, and then Chazuv Itiru Dover Shemlach Lehisa, it doesn't say anything about Michamal Itzel. Whereas, according to Rava, because he has the leeway, he has the extra luxury of adding another heter here, because he collapsed the first two heter into one, he's going to use that second heter to plug in Chamal Itzel in the case of Kli Shemalachto Leheter. So what would Abai say about a Kli Shemalachto Leheter Michamal Itzel? And I'm going to raise the possibility now, we'll have to research this, that according to Abaye, a kli shemalachto lehetel michamal itzel would be also. Is that possible? And if that be the case, then we now have another machlokus between Abai v'Rov. Now we have a third machlokus. What's the last and final stage of the heterim? According to Rava, according to Abaye, it was that you're allowed to move a kli that would take two hands to carry it. What if it takes two human beings to carry it? That was never included in the Chazu V'Tiru. Whereas Rava holds that Chazu V'Tiru is even if it takes two people to carry the kli. Because Rava holds that if one person can carry the kli, it was always Mutar B'Tiltul, even if he has to use two hands. So what's that? What's the connection? You follow what I'm looking for? I'm trying to see if we can find some sort of a thread, right, that links together all these issues into one. I'll read to you a footnote here, number Lamed Gimel. Ben, you have the footnotes here?
I don't have.
Oh, this one you don't have?
I don't have that. It's
a different volume.
Ah, so what do you have? Just a regular Gemara?
Regular Gemara.
All right, so. So I don't know if you have a Rashba. Okay, so you don't. So you have a regular Gemara. So I'll just read to you what he says in the name of the Rashba. He says, Heter Tiltul Kalim, Hanitolim B'Shabbos, B'Shnei B'nei Adam, Huskar rak b'divrei Rav, ilu b'divrei Abai lo huskar leheter kelim anitol b'shtei yodayim. Is therefore the Rashba says cholkim Abai v'Rava b'kach on this issue is machlokshin Abai v'Rava. Shaldas Rava mutul taltel afilu kelim anitol b'shnei b'nei adam ilu Abaye lo hitir ela kelim shenitolim ba'adam echad afilu b'shtei yodayim. So we now have an additional machlokas here about whether or not you're allowed to move a kli that requires two human beings to carry the kli. Abai says no, And Rava says yes. He says, the Rashba says, Valudas Abaye Kevan Shenitan Lahamidas Heter Ha'achron Bekelim Anitol Mishte Yodayim. Since you only have one last heter on your list, and that has to be used for Shte Yodayim, Shuvi Efshal Farish Abraisan Kachidish Godel Yoser Vitira Philip Shne Bnei Adam. You don't have a right to go one step further to the matter Kli that has to be carried by two Bnei Adam. No, so you always take the lesser chidush. But Rava Sover came she knocked up raisa loshen shall ribui kala kelim. Kala kelim means all kelim. Vare mashme shebola hatir letalto afilu kelim. He told b'shnei b'nei adam. You know, Yashikart, that's very nice, but he hasn't really given me any insight into the machlokas shina bai v'rava. And certainly, I don't see. Ostensibly, at the face of it, I don't see any connection between that machlokas and the issue of chamal itzel in the case of a klisha malata heter. Okay, now let's see if we can get any clarity here on Abaye Shita about mechamal itzel. Tzorich mekomo nikra shalol tzorich. Okay. So again, what we said before, Abaye holds that tzorech makomo is not considered a tzorech, and if we need a special matir on litzorech makomo, fine. But what about michama litzel according to Abaye? Does anybody talk about this? I can't find it. It's got to be here somewhere. All right, let me not hold up at this point. So we have again, Rabosai, a number of issues here. We have an issue about chamal itzel in the case of klishim achta leheter. We have the issue of eino nitol ela b'shnei b'nei adam, and we're trying to find the connection between the two. Ben, you know what I would suggest after the shiur, if you would photocopy some of these pages, because to go ahead and buy this chelik will cost you 115 shekel, I think.
I mean, if we're using it on a regular basis, I think we'll.
Well, look, it's a very short perek. The whole of this perek, well, actually in Masifta it's not so small, but the perek actually is only 3 blot long. If you take a look, you have regular Gemara there?
Yes.
So if you take a look, the perek ends on Kuf Chav Vav. We're already holding on Kuf Chav Gimel and Beis. So from Gimel to Vav is 3 blot. But the problem is in Masifta, you know, it's like 30 blot. So I don't know, you'll make that call. What I would suggest is, in the meantime, until you go out and buy it, let's copy like 2-3 pages a day. And by the time you get to buy it, we'll have finished the parrot. And you may decide not to buy it. Okay. But don't buy it for me as a gift, okay? I appreciate the first gift you gave me, and it's very precious, but you know what? Like, I'm not into gifts. In fact, my wife asked me to announce that no one should send any Mishloach Manos. I know you were all planning to send me Mishloach Manos, I'm just kidding. But she said that it ends up that all the chametz we get, piles up until we're in Erev Pesach. And you know the scene, the chametz cooties, as they call them, right? Esve Abaye asks Rabbi the following kasha. Midocha, if you remember the case of this gigantic grinder in Yeshba Shum, only in a case where there's garlic that was crushed and left inside the utensil metaltonos, the imlave metaltonos, but if the madocha has no shum in it, and if it's a klisha malachtol iser, is a metaltonos. So according to Abaye, this could mean that you're not metaltel this kli. Litzorech Makoma. Litzorech Makoma. Oh, gee, I forgot. That's another machlok shina baivrov. We now have 3 machloks. I don't know how I missed this. I just simply slipped my mind. What's the deal with a klisha malachto le'isur litzorech makoma? Abai says it's prohibited, and Rava says it's permissible. So we have three machlokas. Number one, a klishim lachta leheta michamal itzel. Number two, a klishim lachta leisul itzok makomo. And number three, a kli that it could only be carried by shnei bnei adam. Shmuel, can I rely on you to be my scribe over here?
Maybe.
Okay, you have the trick.
That goes into that.
The key number today always seems to be three, right? We have three Caleb that were allowed, and now we have three machlokas in between Abai and Rov.
I thought the first stage was Abayas sees it as two stages, whereas Rabbi sees
it. Right, that's only the Klisha Malakala Heter. Now let's jump to Klisha Malakala Isa. According to Abayas, there's only one Heter left, and that's going to be limited Lishitaso to Glitzorech. It's our gufa. Uh-huh. But Rav always combines together Tzark Gufa, Tzark Makoma. So therefore, Klisha Malakta Leisa is Mutter, Eel, and Tzark Makoma. So we have three different issues here between Abai and Rav. And in each case, Rav is the Makil, which is good news for us because we pass like Rav. But Abai has to be understood. And, you know, at this point, the Machlokas, the threefold Machlokas, seems to be very. Very technical. The interdependence or the relationship between each one of these issues seems to be mechanical. It all depends on whether you have one etter, you have two etter, you know, just a question of numbers here. And then the issue about Shnei B'nei Adam, that seems to add a whole other dimension to the Machlok Shina Baivrav. In any event, getting back to Abai's proof from Adocha, why does the Braisa establish Ein Mitaltin Osa? That since the Klisha Malachta Leisa, it's also Mitiltal. According to Rava, basically Tiltal is mutter in a klisha malachtalisa, at least as far as Litzar Gufu Litzar Makomo is concerned. At least according to Abaye, there was only a special heter of Litzar Gufo. And as we said over and over again, Abaye saw the Litzar Gufo is kind of esse dochalosa, so meaning for the greater good, for the sake of Litzar Tashmish HaMutter, we're going to allow you to move something that's really awesome. But in the case of being matter the kli itself, betiltul, that's called litzarech makomo. That Abai says there was never a heter in a klisha malachtalisa. So therefore, it makes a lot of sense that the Braisa would say, with regard to klisha malachtalisa, in this case of mandoku, when there's no shum, ain't metaltul at all. So because the isa tiltul is really inherent in the kli. Comes along Rav and he answers. He defends himself by saying, no. The truth is that even in the case of a klisha malachta leisa, which is mutter bein litzar gufo bein litzar makova, it still is inherently also betiltol, and I'll prove it to you. The kli is essentially also betiltol, and therefore you're not allowed to move michamal itself for the sake of litzar shabbos. We were mati just that Rava holds litzar shabbos includes not only litzar gufo but also litzar makomo. Esve, another question which Abai raises against Rava from a different price. There's a price in Beitza regarding a machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai. Are you allowed to move an Ali? Ali, remember, was that sort of plate that was used for the butchers, you know, to cut the meat on. And the Braisa records that although there's machlokas about moving the Ali, but nevertheless, Shavin, even Beis Hillel agree. That im kitzev olav bas, if he already cut his meat on top of this ali, and therefore if he wants to move the ali now, it's not litzorech yantif, is sa'asul italtalo. So we have a case of an isur klisha malachtal isur betiltal. Now wait a second, according to Rava, a klisha malachtal isur is mutal italtalo litzorech makomo. And not just litzar gufo. So why does it say it's also hachinami micham litzel? And here again, we have to ask the question: why are we going backwards again, so to speak? Why is Abaye asking the same identical question time and time again? He's just finished telling us that enochinami Rava could sustain any language in the Brice that indicates that a kli shemalat lisa is also betiltal, because albeit it's also betiltal micham litzel. Why does he feel compelled to ask another question from another Braisa and again force Rava into the position of saying that you're allowed to, that there is an Issa Tiltal Michamal Itzel? Well, what's the whole point to the repetition of this Shakal Vitari? The same question, the same answer. And finally, we have the statement of Rabbi Chanina. With that, we'll sort of try to wrap it up for today. Omar Rabbi Chanina. Okay, Rabbi Chanina is now addressing the original position of the Braisa that all Kalim bar 3 are Asim Atilta. And he says the fan, Dimei Nechemya ben Chachalya Nishneis Mishnah Zu. So I have a footnote here. He says that Nechemya was Ole Migolis Bavel at the time of Ezra. You remember that Ezra came with the what's called the Aliyah Shnia, the second group of Jews to come to settle the land of Israel. The first group of Jews goes back to the time of Yoshua, but now at the time of Ezra, which is between the Churban of the first bias and the establishment of the second bias, we have a period of time of Ezra, and Ezra had a good buddy. Who is his good buddy? Nehemiah, right? You know, Ezra and Nehemiah. Actually, who wrote the book of Ezra? It was not Ezra, it was Nehemiah. Well, it could be that Ezra wrote his book, and then Nehemiah wrote his book, and then they combined them together. I'm not sure, but certainly Nehemiah wrote the book of Nehemiah. And if you take a look at the first chapter of Sefer Nehemiah, it opens up with Divrei Nehemiah ben Chachalia. So we're going back in time to the period of Bayis Sheni, the very beginning of Bayis Sheni. And at that time, we have an institution, an enactment, with a very harsh repercussion as far as a total all-inclusive Issa Tiltul Kalim. And Dechsiv, we have a pasuk in Nehemiah, which tells us that after Nehemiah came from the Golus, from Golus Bavel, and he settled in Eretz Yisrael, he had to stand in front of the king when he got to Yerushalayim. And what happens in front of the king? Bayomim Ahema, Ra'isi B'Yehuda, Dorchim Gitos B'Shabbos. They were terrible violations of the Shabbos. We'll explain what they did here. Umeviim Ha'aremos. And basically they gathered together bundles of produce, and they put it on top of the beasts of burden, and they took wines and grapes and figs and all this kind of stuff, and they brought it to Yerushalayim on the day of Shabbos. In other words, basically he saw that the level of observance of Shabbos was, as the Israelis would say, ala panim. It was really the lowest of the low. And therefore he felt that he had to institute a gzera that would be very harsh, and would, you know, we always say that sometimes you have to go to the other extreme in order to get back to the middle, right, the golden mean, but sometimes you have to go, like the Rambam says with regard to Gaiva or Kas, sometimes you have to go to the other extreme in order to get to the middle. So he went very far, because he witnessed with his own eyes, on his way to Yerushalayim, the sad level of Shabbos observance. First of all, he saw Darchim Gitos B'Shabbos. We know what the Gitos are. That's the presses where they used to press the olives and the grapes. And of course, you're talking about an Isur of Meleches Dash and Ketisha and so forth and so on. And this is what he saw with his own eyes. So therefore, Nehemiah instituted this Gezerah. Now, I just want to end with one point. Nehemiah is the end of the period of Nevuah. But we're not talking about Nehemiah here as a Navi. He may have had prophecy, but as a prophet, he has no authority to institute any halachas whatsoever. The halacha cannot be changed by a Navi. A Navi could get a prophecy that for a certain moment in time, you know, God says you're allowed to violate a certain Isur. But you can't make a gzeres chachamim just because you're a Navi. It's ein Navi rachshoy lechadish dov. But Nehemiah had a different hat that he wore. He had a different capacity. He was also a great scholar. And as a scholar, he was able to institute a gzera. So the status of Nehemiah is a twofold status. But what's relevant to us today, as far as this sugya is concerned, is that Nehemiah is what?
Scholar.
He's a scholar. He's a Talmud Chacham. And therefore he has to take on himself, you know, the burden of making sure, guaranteeing that the people would live up to observance. The other point I wanted to make is just an observation, a psychological observation, you know, today we unfortunately have a phenomenon of low, let's say low level Shabbos observance in many Jewish circles.
No expectations.
And you even have Jews who had the education and had the background, but let's call it they're rebellious and they cast off the burden of Shabbos observance. And it sounds a little bit strange to our ears when you hear that Nehemiah, with the goal in mind of being of raising the level of Sabbath observance, would institute very harsh and restrictive gzeros. You know, today the approach is adarabah, you invite someone for Shabbos. There are poskim who say you can invite someone for Shabbos even if you know he's going to drive on Shabbos. Again, I'm not getting into the issue, but there are poskim who are lenient about that. It's so crucial to bring a Jew in. You know, the last thing you want to tell him as soon as he walks over the threshold, you tell him, don't move, don't pick up any kelim. You know, don't touch anything but the knife and the spoon and the fork. You know what I'm saying? That's going to bring him back to Shabbos. I mean, the guy will be out the door within 3 seconds. And he'll probably be stealing your knife, too. You know? So it's very strange on our ears. But I think that, you know, we have to add a little bit of a perspective here. We're not talking about rebellious Jews. We're talking about lack of awareness. In other words, they didn't have that commitment that one day a week we're in a different dimension of reality. Everything changes. They sort of, because of their ignorance, you know, there was a tremendous amount of amaratzis at that time. The ignorance was such that you couldn't even go into a store in Yerushalayim and buy grains without suspecting that maybe the seller is selling you teva, you know, something without a fresh shumas of maizers. This led to the entire gzera called dmai. That's how great the level of amaratzis is. Now, today, if we don't know enough about maizers or shumas, that's because we lived all our lives in chutz la'aretz and so on and so on. But here, they should have known better. But there was a lot of ignorance, and all of the shas you'll see that level of ignorance. So perhaps the answer to our problem might be that Nehemiah's his goal at stage one was awareness of Shabbos. And it was almost like, in a certain sense, punitive. You know, I want you to be straitjacketed on this day of the week. It's the most extreme kind of awareness of Shabbos. You know, don't start moving anything on Shabbos. And, you know, let's see if you can gradually, you know, sort of slip into the Shabbos cognizance, the Shabbos awareness. Once we see that you're aware of Shabbos and you begin to learn the halachas, and then you become meticulous about the observance, ain't nothing now we're going to let loose. We're going to allow you slowly but surely to move other kelim, whether it's a kli shemalachta leheter, possibly even a kli shemalachta leiser, even a big large kli that's very heavy that has to be carried by two people. So I both said, what I need for you for tomorrow is to hold on to this rivet here that's on page 255, and at the same time to make sure that you have this sugya here that we want to continue with on Kuf Chaf Gimel Amud Beis. So if everyone could get a hold of, and this is certainly a clue you're allowed to move, not only on the weekday but even on Shabbos. All right then, so that's a hint for Chazar on Shabbos, and we'll end here. I'm just gonna